I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 26th of September. Wisconsin has the worst racial disparity in the criminal justice system in the country. 12.8% of the state's African-American men are now behind bars in state prison or local jails. It's twice the national rate of 6.7%. And number two on the list is Oklahoma, and even their rate is much lower than ours, 9.7% incarceration rate. Also, we lead the nation in the rate of locking up Native American men, 7.6%, just ahead of South Dakota. The 53206 zip code, which is close to where we are in Milwaukee, is ground zero for incarcerated black males, an area where 3,837 black men are either currently serving time or have in the past. How did this happen? That's the focus of the first hour of our program today. And a study from Employment and Training Institute at UW-Milwaukee gave us those statistics. We'll have two guests with us. John Pawasarat will join us, director of the UWM School of Continuing Education and author of Wisconsin's Mass Incarceration of African-American Males, Workforce Challenges for 2013. Reverend Willie Briscoe will join us later this hour. He is president of MICA in Milwaukee. Their mission is to do what is just in the city of Milwaukee. And he also had a 25-year distinguished career in law enforcement and corrections. All hour, we'll welcome your phone calls. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can find us on Twitter at K Dunn Show. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Those figures are just pretty shocking. How did this happen?
Well, it's a little complicated. The rates of incarceration in the early 90s were pretty steady. And then
Can I ask you to get a little closer to your phone just while, because your level's a little bit low. Thank you.
Okay.
There we go.
The beginning of the drug enforcement, three strikes, you're out, mandatory sentencing, created a fivefold increase in the number of African-American men going into the Department of Corrections prison system. Beyond the doubt, that had the biggest impact, and the declines the last 3 years, I think, are the result of some drug-related policies done by the district attorney, where you would divert individuals who are appropriate for a diversion program so that they're given treatment, very close supervision, and importantly, they don't wind up going to jail, which, if that does happen, of course, many men come out worse than they did going in. So I think the combination of those things really was the cause of most of the huge increase.
Mm-hmm. But when you look at our state compared to other states, I was amazed to find that even Mississippi and Alabama, the rate in those states is much, much lower than in the state of Wisconsin. What is it about our state that makes us way at the top? Is there something in addition?
I tell you, I'm as surprised as most people at that finding. Everyone knows that population of African-American men have some serious problems, behavioral and otherwise barriers to employment. And that's what we do at the university, is try to assist governmental bodies to increase the effectiveness of initiatives targeted to difficult to serve populations, and clearly the most difficult population to serve are African-American males, and they often don't have completion of high school going for them. Almost none of them have a driver's license that's valid to get the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And if the jobs don't exist in the neighborhoods where they live, which they don't, there's 25 job seekers for every one job in the poor areas of the city, and they're also competing against a whole character of crews from better educated, less educated, but most importantly, having that prison time gives you a mark that's very difficult to deal with, and sadly, difficult to deal with throughout these individual lives.
Mm-hmm, I imagine. So what is it you can do? How can we lower that rate of unemployment and probably recidivism as well? Are you able to find jobs and get driver's licenses for a lot of people?
Well, we don't do the programs the governmental job training agencies do, but there are many good examples of programs that work effectively with this population. They don't get funded anywhere near the amount that they should. And if you consider the cost of imprisonment for someone in the DOC system, it's $95 a day. Much of that money could be diverted to programs that are directed to diverting men from getting into the system to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You could look at the population in three ways, I think. There's three parts. You have the population that's out, that had been in prison. That's a population where you could put in place trial employment, community service work, surely getting their driver's license reinstated, because most often the driver's license is taken away for reasons unrelated to driving, and mostly for failing to pay bills. So working out some program with the courts to substitute community service instead of the fine that has to be paid related to the suspension of their driver's license. It's a problem that's fixable. Many other populations are difficult. If you have a young mother not completing high school, well, that's a tough one, because in addition to raising children, they also have to try to increase the level of skills they have to get and retain employment. So second population would be those who are in prison now. And before they leave, it would be good to have their driver's license status reinstated, or if not that, then at least a Wisconsin ID card, so you have something walking in the door when you go out looking for employment. Third thing is, very few of our young African-American men in their teens don't have a driver's license. It isn't taught in Milwaukee public schools as it had been in the past. MPS has taken leadership, and there's a program in place that prepares young men and women to get their driver's license. So that's a very good thing, but once again, that's only on sort of a pilot basis and clearly needs to be expanded in order to make them employable once they get out.
Well, and then there's an added component, which is a big problem in this city, and that's making sure there are jobs available for all of these people. I would imagine that's a huge problem.
It certainly is. In the past, there were always the tannery jobs, the foundry jobs, the heavy lifting work in manufacturing, where if you had a strong back and a willingness to work, you had a job.
Mm-hmm.
And for the prison population, that was a very good source of employment. Now they're competing against young adults who are seeking employment with a higher level of skill and with less baggage. So that's clearly an impact, but the job gap, which we survey or have been surveying every year, shows that only 25 people looking for a job for a single job in the poorer neighborhood. So it's a 25-to-1 competition to get a job. Certainly there are retail jobs that pay modest, perhaps, salaries for a family, but those jobs oftentimes aren't a good match from the employer's point of view. African-American men, it just is it's a mark walking in the door, much less if he went to prison.
Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure I understood you correctly. Did you say that we're starting to see changes? I assume that there aren't as many nonviolent offenders who are going to prison now. Did you say that, or did I just think you said that?
What I said was the last 3 years, the number of men being sent to prison has gone down significantly. I think that's a result of the district attorney's program to like divert individuals from prison, but hold them on a very short leash, serving a supervision time that varies based on the significance of their legal problem. So,
and while you're being diverted from prison, you are getting, if you have a drug problem, you're getting treatment for that, you're getting job training, or is that component not there?
Well, it's up to the district attorney.
I see.
To negotiate the terms of the sentence. And it could be a variety of things. Some individuals have some serious mental health issues. Others have alcohol drug-related issues. And then there's a whole population of men who really haven't had a traditional job and need to be acclimatized to the working world.
Right.
Most of them haven't completed high school, and sadly, if you haven't done that, you know, it's the most basic thing for looking for a job is you have to at least be able to be there and to sustain employment at the hours required by the employer.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, that's a bottom-line definition of high school. If you're able to sit in your seat for 4 years and do what you're told and achieve at a reasonable level, those are the kind of behavioral characteristics that employers are looking for.
Right. And to go back before we bring Reverend Briscoe into the conversation, I think that not too many people are aware of this driver's license and the recovery programs. You indicate this is a huge number of people, 27,874 non-offender African-American men in Milwaukee County with driver's license violations, failure to pay fines, civil forfeitures, preventing them from legally driving to employment. Again, a huge number of people.
We've been looking at this for 15 years because it's a problem that many, many people face, mostly because of the city of Milwaukee's municipal court, where if you don't pay a fine for, say, truancy, jaywalking, not having a vehicle properly licensed, if you don't pay the fine, then they have a way to contact the Department of Transportation to put a lock on their driver's license.
Mm.
If they didn't have a driver's license when they were arrested, then they'll prevent that person from obtaining a driver's license before they can get their license updated and fixed. There are a number of programs in place that have been shown to be effective in turning people's lives around through a maze of different courts and violations. The programs aren't funded at nearly the level they ought to be funded. But clearly, there are programs that work. They're effective. But people have complicated lives. You don't pay your bills. You have no interest in even getting a driver's license. People drive regardless.
Right.
I think it's almost become accepted culture in poor neighborhoods that driving without a license, this is not an issue. People don't value that or mark you as being part of the neighborhood. People just drive regardless of whether they have obtained the driver's license. This is very important now because the chief of police in Milwaukee has been instituting these stops, and they've increased a huge number. And when you stop a person, if you're in the poor neighborhood, it's an African-American male, your chances are better than half that either this person does not have a valid driver's license or was a criminal in the DOC system. And then if you have drugs in the car, that kicks in immediately. And now the chief of police and the mayor of the city of Milwaukee are pushing for legislation that would give a mandatory three-year license if you were caught in possession of a handgun and were not licensed to have one. For instance, ex-prisoners from DLC should never be in the possession of a gun. Mm-hmm. If they are, under this new proposal, it'll be a mandatory three-year sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, will increase the number of people in the prison system, much as the drug legislation did during the 2004-2007 period. So that we'll have another huge increase in incarceration when there clearly are ways to approach the problem other than a three-year mandatory sentence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, John, very much for being with us. I guess the first part of the show, John Pawasarat, he is at UWM and prepared an alarming report, Wisconsin's Mass Incarceration of African-American Males, Workforce Challenges for 2013. He is director of UWM School of Continuing Education. We're going to continue our conversation. Different guests, same topic, and welcome your phone calls. Reverend Willie Briscoe will be joining us momentarily, president of MICA here in Milwaukee, which is an organization that has as its mission, I like this, to do what is just in the city of Milwaukee. He has a 25-year distinguished career in law enforcement and corrections, retired as the deputy superintendent of the Milwaukee County House of Correction, and he's also associate minister of the New Covenant Baptist Church, was elected president of MICA in 2010. We'll welcome phone calls for him. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. The focus of this hour, over half of all African-American men from Milwaukee County in their 30s and half of men in their early 40s have been or are currently in adult Department of Correction institutions. That figure has gone down somewhat the last couple of years, but this is a huge problem in this area in terms of employment, in terms of having much of a life, really. So we'll talk to Reverend Briscoe about that. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Reverend Willie Briscoe is joining us in our studios now in Milwaukee, and we'll welcome phone calls for him. Reverend Briscoe, let me ask you, though, to respond with just an overall question. When I read about half African-American men from Milwaukee County in their 30s, half in their early 40s have been or are currently in correctional institutions, boy, you just read that statistic and you say, how in the world did this happen? How did this happen? How do you answer that?
Well, when I look at that and you say it's overwhelming, we should have instituted a state of emergency years ago when we saw these disturbing numbers. This is a unique situation where you have a inner city where industry and hope has disappeared from, and you look at this, the school systems have been stripped, and they're surrounded by suburbs of influence that where they cannot actually crack that grass ceiling to get out there either to jobs or either to live. So it's almost like Milwaukee, the inner city, is surrounded by a invisible fence disparity, of hopelessness, low economics, but it goes farther than that. What happened is, like John mentioned, about the industry and the foundries and the factories that left this area, our civic planners did not look at how we were going to replace those. They kind of sat idle and watched them leave without saying, okay, what are we going to do in the meantime? So there was no contingency plan. So now you have a population of individuals who are being recycled back and forth in the jail. Each time they go to jail, one more stigma is placed on them to bar them from jobs, from freedoms. And I look at the felons without being able to vote and get into federal housing. That is almost like you have taken someone and charged them with treason so that they're not really able to enjoy or recover any of their rights as American citizens. Mm-hmm. That's mind-blowing that we as a country that is affluent as we are have a way of totally dispossessing our people like that.
A point was made in the research, people who have researched this, when you look at Wisconsin's incarceration rate of African-American males and Mississippi or Alabama, if you didn't read the report, you would say, oh, of course, Mississippi and Alabama would be much higher. But it's not. It's a whole lot lower than we are. Someone made the analysis, the reason that is lower in Alabama and Mississippi is that African-Americans have more political power, that they're a small portion of the state's population, but they don't have much political power. Is there a correlation?
There is a correlation, but I tell you to look at the South. The South is more desegregated than the North. There, every county you will find an equal or a portion of African Americans, white Latinos, all over the state. If you look at this state, they're concentrated in four major areas, and all of them in southeastern Wisconsin or Madison, and the rest of the state. It becomes something that we don't talk about, race. We have hid that under the covers and said it is now inappropriate to talk about that race and racial disparity. Well, it's staring you right in the face when you look at the numbers.
Right. So when John was talking about people being able to turn their lives around, it seems to me as though that's a tall order for many of these young people's lives. If you haven't graduated from high school, if you're living in poverty, you can't really find a job. You may commit a crime to get some money or whatever. You go to prison, and then you really can't find a job, and you can't get a car because you didn't pay a fine when you were in high school for a ticket that you got. It just goes on and on and on, Reverend Briscoe. I wonder how you tackle this problem.
It is virtually impossible for them to reclaim or to reestablish themselves with a criminal record, a criminal background. We say all the right things during the political movement. We say all of the right things, but these people are discriminated against, almost unheard of. It's impossible for them to get work, possible for them to get into public housing, license, all of these things that we say that make us a country and that we state every day that we need to compete on a global basis. Well, look at our schools. Driving is as much of a right in our community as anything. So why wouldn't we have this in our school? First of all, you're training children how to drive. You're training them the rules of the road and where driving fits. So now you have people in the inner city who don't have the money to go to driving school, who don't have the money to pursue these things that they know that they need to survive. So they do it illegally.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep compounding the situation by getting caught and getting fines that they can't pay. And we penalize in this country more if you do something as a financial penalty. And if you can't pay the financial penalty, we take away another right. And those people sometimes get so insurmountable in debt. Same with our college graduates who have gone and who have assumed these great debts. It takes them years to get from under this. We can't compete on a global basis unless this country has a comprehensive and a deliberate total reform of our penal system and how we do business as government.
Have you noticed, John was talking about the incarceration rate going down some the last few years. Has it gone down substantially? Is that a move in the right direction or not?
That has happened basically because of, like he said, with DAs and lawmakers beginning to understand that you have to use the TAD approach, treatment and alternative diversions. That is one of the reasons why you're seeing the numbers go down, because people who have nonviolent crimes, who have drug offenses and alcohol offenses, who are suffering from mental illness, are now being diverted and getting the treatment that they need, and it is accounting for the numbers going down. So that is even more evidence that you need to put more money into these programs and increase that.
And obviously more money into jobs somehow. We keep talking, you and I have talked about this for years. People in this community have talked about this for years. What does it take to do something? Do we need federal money, a stimulus program, or what do we need?
And I don't want to be too overly simplistic, but we need the will of human beings to realize that human beings are the greatest commodity and resource on this planet. We need to stop automating them out of jobs and automating them out of careers just because we can for greater production. It should be our intentional and deliberate attempt to make sure that every human being has the right to live, a right to a job, a right to the pursuit of happiness. But we constantly go against that principle by replacing human beings and disposing of them. One of the things that I tell people, every human being that goes to prison, and there is going to be a need for prison, but if that person has a release date, from the day that he walks in that prison to the date he released, should be working on him becoming a better human being and being released into society with some tools and some ability to compete in the job market. We look at prison as a punitive thing. The sentence is punishment enough, not the treatment and not the isolation. That should not be a part of what that prison is, unless this person is in there for life. But if you're going to release a human being from prison and hope that he doesn't return, you've got to give him some tools and make him fit back into society and let him have a purpose in society.
Let's go to phone calls. We have some of them coming in, and we welcome more. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Reverend Willie Briscoe is our guest this part of the program, and we're looking at the very, very high incarceration rate of African-American males in this country. We lead the nation. We lead the nation, Wisconsin, in that percentage, which is something. 12.8% of the state's African-American men now behind bars. That number is going down, but the reasons why people are going to jail and the diversion programs to keep people from going to jail are lacking. Let's go to Dan in Oshkosh, our first caller. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call today.
Sure.
Yeah, and this was touched on, and I'm glad it was. But talking about incarcerating people for drug offenses and stuff like this, when that's not the thing that we should be doing. We need some proper education of what can be done, but to incarcerate a person for something like cannabis use and stuff. It's a non-toxic vegetable, yet people have been busted 3 times for that, and they are in prison. People serving 55 years for a non-toxic vegetable, for being in possession of a non-toxic vegetable. We've got farmers that are being looked at to be put in incarcerated because they're selling raw milk. And it's just, to me, this is just insane, you know.
Reverend Briscoe.
I agree. We're really not talking about so much as the legalization. We're talking about individuals who are no threat to society, which prisons and incarceration was meant for, who have either an addiction, who either have a habit, or who either suffer from mental illness, who can be treated and can be kept in the community without putting this burden on taxpayers.
Here's an email from Adam in La Crosse. I just read a book called The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. She puts the idea forward that getting people of color into the criminal justice system is the new manifestation of a very old idea dealing with keeping particular populations, quote, in their place. What do you think of this assertion?
I've read that book. To me, it is the Bible of black mass incarceration and of African-American incarceration. That was a thing that happened when slavery was abolished for individuals who were caught walking the roadways or who were caught. It was called vagrancy. And what they was then, if you were stopped and you were found not to have a job or not to have any response, they would put you in a penal system and then force you to work as almost as a slave. So this is the same thing. We have unemployed young individuals in our community who eventually will resort to some type of effort to make a living. We penalize them for trying to make that living that we couldn't afford for them by giving them a job. We put them in prison, and now we use them in this prison industry.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Leslie in Minnesota. Hi.
Wow, thank you for taking my call. I honestly didn't think you would, because this is kind of I don't want to be labeled a racist, but I really appreciate that you're having a conversation talking about issues like this, because there's definitely problems, but I don't see anything that our government is doing as fixing them. Where I feel is important for everybody to kind of work together at is some way to break out of the system of entitling people to get something for nothing. And I wish we could have a system where, sure, if you can't get a job, this is a job like the CCC kind of. This is a job that you can do to earn money if you're willing to work. And then that, the government would supply or provide the money that they just hand out freely to not just blacks, but any welfare-type people who may be abusing the system, because we all know that there are people who are abusing the system, whether they're white or black or whatever. But if they could make a job for those people to earn what they get, and that would eventually teach people that if they work, they will get something.
I'm not sure there's a lot of money being given out freely to people. I would take issue with what Leslie said. It is what she said about creating a job stimulus program seems to me to be entirely sensible.
When you find a situation where jobs are available and where a community has the availability to attain jobs and employment, you will find that there's less crime, less incarceration, and less hopelessness. What you're saying basically contradicts what you're asking, because you're saying people are taking things that they're entitled to, but if you gave them jobs, that they would not be on the system. If there were jobs available in Milwaukee right now, I guarantee you the crime rate wouldn't be where it was. The helplessness and hopelessness would not be where it is. The fact is that individuals are being stigmatized and being kept out of the job market, and they're being kept in the inner city of Milwaukee with no access to the outlying areas. And I wouldn't say that it was racist to the point, but it has a dealing to do with race. It does.
Can you point, Reverend Briscoe, to any experimental programs over the last few years, that any government programs, any community programs that have really targeted certain neighborhoods and tried to find jobs and were successful in helping to turn people's lives around? I'm looking for the positive here somewhere.
Well, one of the things that we use in the 11 by 15 campaign that we're on is reducing the prison population in half by 2015. We look right next door to Minnesota, who basically just changed their mindset of incarcerating individuals and just stated that we are not just going to willy-nilly incarcerate individuals. And if you do incarcerate them for your county, then your county is going to have to pay for their stay in this penal system. So what the counties decided, they didn't want to pay this extra additional money because they thought that the state was supposed to. So they became creative in how they incarcerated people. So they started putting more people into diversion. And if you save more money in the penals, you're able to divert that money to other resources, education, diversion. Those things would help create jobs. We are paying more in this state, and I'm sure you read it in the report, in this state for the penal system than we are for the UW education system. That's preposterous.
What did our guest say, $91 to $95 a day?
Yes.
A day. That's a lot of money.
Yes.
Thanks for the call, Leslie. Fawn in Madison, hi.
And I don't think I want any pickled vegetables.
Yeah, I don't want pickled vegetables either.
Yeah, he'll eat a couple pickled vegetables.
Wait, Fawn, I don't know who you're talking to, but you're on the radio right now, I think.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I want to give a shout out. I'm also working with the 11 by 15 campaign.
Oh.
Yes.
And I feel very strongly about this issue. I just want to point out an aspect of this whole thing that I think has been underemphasized right now in this discussion, namely that study after study has shown that drug usage rates are practically identical between blacks and whites.
Yep.
In all the cities where this has been studied. And yet the apprehension, the arrest, and the method of prosecution has varied greatly between what happens to black people and what happens to white people once they're in the system, how they're located, whether they're arrested or not, and what happens to them once they begin to come into the system. And at the same time, we also see that study after study has shown that when identical applications, set up mock, applicants for jobs in various cities, and black and white. And it turned out that when the same or nearly identical resume was submitted, but the candidate was black versus white, the the black candidate was deprioritized, whereas the white candidate was given greater priority in hiring. It's been shown in the job market as well, greater priority in getting housing and better rates of mortgages, which we've seen all throughout this decade. And I just want to mention that that's an important factor when we enter into this discussion. We just take note of that. It's good to have these policies in place, and it's essential for us to be aware of the tendency to apply them differentially so that we can guard against that and ensure that those who really need it most receive the services that they need and the treatment that they deserve.
Thank you, Fawn, for the call. Reverend Briscoe.
I agree with it. Thank you for pointing that out. That is correct, what she just mentioned. And I kind of went over that by saying that Milwaukee is surrounded by suburbs of influence. You just heard John state that the increased policing and the now increased penalties for possession of guns and drugs. We need to find the source of the guns. This is the final result of what happens with the guns coming in this community. But the guns are not manufactured in this community, and they are far and by far not being transported in this community by people who are in the community. We had, as I said before, we have to realize that there's a racial disparity in all of this that has to be kept on the forefront, and that's why I thank her for those comments.
Thanks for the call. Let's center for a moment on this 53206 zip code in Milwaukee, which has been described as ground zero for incarcerated black males. 3,837 black men either currently serving time or have in the past. Who lives in that zip code? What's going on in that zip code?
It looks like a third world. Mm. We are especially concentrating in that area, with not only with our 11 by 15, but also with our economic justice outreach. We saw that map that came from the UWM study, and when you see that map, it's overwhelming to see how many people in that area have returned and currently are in prison and keeps going back and forth to prison. So there is no jobs in that area. There is no industry. There is nothing, but it's like almost like a third world country in the inner city of Milwaukee. The hopelessness and depression in that area is staggering. It's like I said, I'm surprised that no one in our government official, no one have said we need to declare a state of emergency in Milwaukee, because this is going to take more than at the local level to correct. This is going to take a huge incentive by this country to get a stimulus, some kind of way to rejuvenate these communities, or else the city is just can't afford to continue in this neighborhood.
Imagine what would happen if you had some kind of green energy program or something to help the infrastructure of the country, or I don't know, some kind of business that made something important to human beings and located it, and you had a new company that had 2,000 jobs available, and they were going to open 6 months from now. It's hard not to believe that that would make a huge difference to that community.
It's got to be the will of our leaders to intentionally target these areas for improvement, mm-hmm. Because it's not going to happen piecemeal. The degradation is so far that it's going to take something huge, and it's going to take a concerted effort by the whole community. I listened to John talk about some of the driver's license recovery programs, mm-hmm. All of these programs have to start working in concert. They're in different areas and different silos. We have different churches and organizations working on this. But it has to become some kind of way. We have to put down our individual wants and needs and come with a concerted effort, a joint effort, that we can make the most, most impact. Because right now, we're doing it in several little silos, and it's not getting done. It's not getting done.
Reverend Willie Briscoe is our guest. This part of the program, we're looking this hour at the study from the Employment and Training Institute at UW-Milwaukee showing that Wisconsin has the worst racial disparity in the criminal justice system in the country. Why is that? And here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655 is our number. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to an email. Reverend Briscoe, Doug sends this email. He feels the disproportionate amount of blacks in prison is due to the fact that blacks commit a disproportionate amount of crime in Milwaukee based on FBI statistical information, just as it is in New York City.
There are several, and I think we've answered that. Where you find a situation of hopelessness and where people are trapped in those areas, like I said, I tell anybody, the difference between black and white in this city is when you drive to the barriers that's going into Waukesha, our color becomes, as black people, becomes our identifying a badge. As a white person travels north, they just become another person of that area. When we made the distinction between the South and the North, the South is more of a desegregated area than the North is. The North is still an area of segregation. So when you have people concentrated in the area without jobs, without resources, without educational access, and without, and I say that because of the schools being deprived of driver's ed, art, gym, all of the aesthetic things that makes a person a full human being, you're going to see disparities.
We go next to Joanne in Watertown. Hi.
Hi. I'm so glad to get on. I just wanted to say that I moved out of the state for 8 years, came back in, drove down Capitol Drive, and I was overwhelmed when we went under the bridge. And I was ready to cry. It's pathetic. It's just not fair. If I lived in Whitefish Bay, I would be ashamed. I just, because you go down a couple blocks, the streets aren't kept as well. The properties are horrifying, and I just... I can see where they're just stuck down there, and it's wrong. People have to start realizing that we're not doing right by these people.
Thanks, Joanne, very much for the call. Let's go next to Lori in Milwaukee. Hi, Lori.
Hi, thank you so much. And going back to what the Reverend and yourself had said earlier about 53206, look at what Talgo would have done for that area. I grew up over there, and I remember when... the factory was there and open, and all the businesses that flourished around there. I mean, tons of them. Also, when it comes to the railway that would have gone from here to Madison and all those outlying areas, and even the butchering of the transit system that was taking people out to further inlays and getting jobs and having jobs, those have been cut for like the last 8 to 10 years. People are no longer able to get out there to those jobs and go to work. And so... they're stuck. I moved out of the 53206, lived there for a long time. But living in that area, I was burglarized 6 times in 3 different areas where I lived, car burglarized several times, and purse snatched twice. Mm. And I understand why, but it doesn't allay or ally the anger of why, because mm-hmm. it doesn't really have to be. But it's something that has to be challenged from babyhood all the way up. I live I live now in 53223. Not much difference, but a little bit. I work in an area where predominantly the people, when the frontline people are people of color. When white people walk into the facility, I have seen them stand and circle around, turn in full circle, 360, and kind of like point, like, oh, my God, I'm surrounded. And you see the fear, the trepidation, and you don't know why. It's like, what are you fearful of? Okay, you're darned if you do, if you're darned if you don't. We want to be employed. We're reasonable people like anyone else. We want the same as anyone else, which means a given chance, once a place to be productive. The country that I grew up in that is no longer representing what I thought it did at one point. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you. It's pretty powerful, Lori. Thank you for the call.
Yes, thank you, Lori. We often say that we are not looking for handouts. We are not looking. We just want opportunity. And if you are fearful of us, and if you think that we are like aliens from another planet, and we're treated as that, sometimes we will react that way. Because one of the greatest things that's not mentioned in our community is sometimes we get treated so badly that we think that badly is where we're supposed to be. And people don't aspire to do better because they say, well, no one is going to expect it and no one cares, so we're going to behave this way. We have to, as she said, start from the cradle all the way up of teaching that you do have a right to be in this city and you do have a right to demand better, and you have to stand up and make sure that you get better, because otherwise no one is going to relinquish this power unless we actually stand up to them.
Hmm. You mentioned earlier, Reverend Briscoe, the issue of segregation, and Lori certainly dramatically brought that home. How does that play into this whole issue of unemployment and high incarceration rates among African Americans? Is this significant in some way? How should we be considering it?
It's very significant because that is one of the reasons why it is so difficult to get out to these outlying areas. Nobody wants these bus routes coming through the area. We look at the Waukesha, New Berlin area. Look at Talgo. Talgo was supposed to connect this state to the country, bring us into the modern times. But everybody know what was behind that and why the governor was so opposed to that, because the people that he represented did not want this train traveling through their communities. It did not want access to come through their communities. So we have to get race back on the front page, not as playing a race card, not as saying that this is what caused, but we have to become cognizant of that and start talking about it, because the people up north have to know that the people in Milwaukee have a right to exist, and they have to realize that they have same hopes and aspirations that they do.
Janet in Maguanago, hi.
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 I don't want to talk about conspiracy theories, but I understand it's true that the same people who run the media have a financial interest in the private prison system. So the more that's on the media about crime, the more people want people to be incarcerated. And that is a financial benefit to the same individual.
What media? There's a lot of media, Janet. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about national television. I'm talking about network television. I'm talking about newspapers that are owned by the same group of individuals. It's something that I wish you would look into for a possible program.
Are you familiar with this?
I would say more than the media, it's corporations. There is a concerted effort by corporations to make the prisons a money-making venture. That's why you have this privatization sweeping the country. One of the goals of private prisons is that we'll come into your community and run your prison system, but you got to guarantee us 95% occupancy. So what that is stating is that we're willing to take that financial burden off of you if you're willing to feed us the individuals to keep the prisons full. That is a very, very present attempt. And I would ask that you would look up the organization ALEC when you get a chance, or Google it and look up and type in privatization of prisons and see what comes up.
Thanks, Janet, very much for your call. And any information you want to send us would be just fine with us. What are the initiatives that are taking place, if any? Are there any federal initiatives that are taking place that will create jobs, that will address these problems? You have about 30 seconds.
Well,
and that's probably all it takes to describe what's helpful.
Well, what we're looking at right now as an organization is federal contract, highway contracts, those things that are providing jobs. And when you drive by these sites, and this is common in our community, we look to see how many minorities are on those sites. And you realize that these federal dollars are not doing what they're supposed to, and they say they were going to do when they come into your community. The highway projects, we now have the zoo freeway going. We have the Westline project that went up, that's going up. We have the south side, there's going to be another housing. Those are all supposed to be federal dollars and federal opportunities to give people some work and to give us a financial stimulus to those areas. We have got to start looking at those intently and making sure that they are doing for those communities what they say they're going to do.
Reverend Briscoe, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Reverend Willie Briscoe, president of MICA here in the city of Milwaukee, and he is also associate minister of the New Covenant Baptist Church. Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Rhonda Fanning for producing this program. Great hour ahead, so please stay with us.